I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're going to talk about the border and, more importantly, the communists tonight. Buck Sexton joins me talking about all this insanity at Columbia. We have culture wars stuff. There is so much to get to tonight on I'm Right. Okay, let's deal with something right off the bat. Something that's been gnawing at me right off the bat. No, I'm not talking about the Senate specifically passing the whole Ukraine funding thing. Senator Mike Lee came on here yesterday, was doing everything he could to try to stop it. Turned out he couldn't stop it. Okay, it sails through the Senate. Okay, we got all that. But that's not what hits me most about it. What hits me most about it is this. I can't get this feeling out of my mind. This feeling that the people we send to D.C., Republican and Democrat, they really don't care about us, and they're not afraid of us. Remember, these are politicians. And what do we normally complain about when it comes to politicians? Ah, look at this guy just licking his finger and seeing which way the wind's blowing. He's just doing whatever's popular. Politician doesn't believe in anything. But our politicians seem to have changed, especially recently. They're not licking their finger and sticking it in the air to see what's popular with the people before they vote. They're just doing whatever they want, even when it's really unpopular with the people. And they don't care. And they don't seem afraid. 70% of the American public was against another blank check for Ukraine. People know the war's lost. They understand that. And yet, Congress not only passed it, they brag about it on camera. It's not like they passed it in the dead of night, never made a press release about it. They pass it, run to the TV camera, and rub it in your face that they just passed it. Totally unafraid. And along those same lines, let's talk about the border here for a moment. I'm worried about something. And beyond just the border issue itself, the border is a disaster. In fact, this is a short montage of just, this is like from the past 15 minutes of stories.
The Brunswick County Sheriff's Office arrested a man who was accused of an unusual sex crime. According to the Sheriff's Office website, 34-year-old Jose Luis Gomez Espinal was booked yesterday. He is charged with 4 counts of sexual contact or penetration under the pretext of medical treatment.
A migrant charged with aggravated rape of a child is being held without bail. Corey Alvarez was in court Monday for a dangerousness hearing. He's accused of sexually assaulting a teenage girl in Rockland. Investigators say it happened last month while they were both living at this hotel, which is currently housing migrants.
An undocumented immigrant is being held in the St. Lucie County Jail, accused of being part of a Colombian theft ring that's connected to the burglary of a Port St. Lucie home.
A Guatemala man in the country illegally is behind bars tonight for a deadly stabbing.
The Haitian migrant you just mentioned turned himself in seeking asylum here in El Paso last year. He was then allowed to live in the United States. He now sits in jail accused of murder.
That's just in case maybe you're thinking we loaded up the deck here and we went digging through the archives. That's just in the past few days. And the American people are furious about it. And it's not just like it's Republicans. Republicans, independents, even a majority of Democrats are upset. Every day we wake up, we turn on the news, someone else got raped, someone else got murdered. Everyone's upset. And yet, not only are they not stopping, it's full speed ahead. We have the latest news now that they're not even deporting people to levels they were deporting people at prior to COVID. They're just flat out dumped deportations. It's not happening at all. In fact, we are apprehending criminals, finding out they're criminals, and the politicians who know we're upset about illegal immigration are giving them work permits. Did you hear this exchange with Josh Hawley and Mayorkas?
Expunged. Nothing is done to this guy. He had a criminal record to start with. He's in the country on illegal grounds. You have falsely and illegally allowed him in. He commits a crime against a child. He's not prosecuted. It's expunged. In November, get this. In November, Ibarra files an application for employment authorization. And unbelievably, on December the 9th, 2023, it's approved. So this is your policies in action, Mr. Secretary. A criminal is permitted into this country on grounds flatly not permitted, flatly contradictory to the statute. He commits a crime against a child, and then he gets a work permit. Then in February, he commits the heinous crime against Lake and Riley. Is this a record that you are proud of?
Senator, you've misstated some facts.
I have read from the parole file, which you have said you don't recall, don't have, you miscited. I'm reading from it. It is right here.
Senator, I am confident that justice will be vindicated in the criminal prosecution of the case.
Well, hopefully he'll get more of a trial than you got. Otherwise, there'll be no justice for anyone at all.
But they're not moving. That's what I can't get out of my mind. No matter how angry we get, no matter how much testimony, no matter how many news stories, it's not just that they're not moving. It's full speed ahead. Joe Biden just announced, the DHS, I should say, they're going to take $300 million of your money and they're going to hand it to sanctuary cities to feed and shelter illegals. So the federal government opened up your border on purpose, flooded your country with murderers and rapists, and then stole money from your paycheck to feed the murderers, rapists, and drug dealers. And you know about it, and I know about it, and they know that we know about it. And yet, they're not stopping. They're all so bold, and I can't get that out of my mind. I mean, even the illegals themselves are bold. These dirtballs come here illegally and they're complaining about the food.
But at the shelter, the food, my kids cannot eat the food at the shelter. And on Ramadan time, we couldn't eat because when you come back for on the breaks, the food is no good at all. And they give us 2 months to stay at the shelter, and then you have to go out again with your luggages and the kids and find another place. It's very difficult. And also, I have a kid that is like 18 to 19. Until now, he doesn't have no school. So please help us.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Was the food cold? Man, I feel terrible. I'm pretty busted up over it. Look at how bold they are. They're all moving forward. No matter how mad we get, no matter how many emails to Congress, no matter how many protests, no matter what we do, it's all full speed ahead. And I can't get it out of my mind. We've gotten to the point where our despicable politicians don't even care about public opinion anymore. What do we do with that? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Might want to pick yourself up a Byrna pistol, unless you think you can fight off all the new murderers and rapists we got in the country. I'm telling you right now, a Byrna pistol launcher, they're non-lethal, by the way, is required now at all times. Please don't just buy one. Buy one and keep one on you. They shoot pepper balls or tear gas balls. Again, they're legal in all 50 states. No background checks. They'll deliver it to your front door because they're non-lethal. I carry lethal and non-lethal. I believe in carrying both. You need one of these in your car, by your bed. Ladies, especially, you're out jogging with your little mini dog. You need a Byrna pistol launcher on you. This country's full of some very, very evil people, violent people now. We have to act that way. Carry one. buy one and carry one. They have great options to carry it to, easy to use. You don't have to know anything about guns or anything like that. You point and squeeze. BYRNA. Byrna.com/Jesse saves you 10%, so don't pay full price, all right? Byrna.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, so universities are bad places. Universities have been bad, poisonous, evil places for a very long time in this country. Everyone's starting to figure this out more and more, and thanks to all this Hamas crap going on in Colombia, that gas pedal appears to be pressed to the floor at this point in time. Joining me now, my friend needs no friggin' introduction on this show, on this network, hosts the biggest radio show in the country, Clay and Buck Sexton. All right, Buck. Universities are bad, evil places. I'm not sure why I'm supposed to give a crap that Columbia is burning down. That sounds wonderful to me. I've always wanted Columbia to burn down.
Yeah, I think that what you're seeing is just that there's been decades of intellectual, cultural, and moral rot at these places. And now it's on an issue that has somehow been able to unite, I think, a lot of the worst leftist factions on campus. And you have people who have a lot of influence, who ordinarily are quiet about what's going on the campuses, suddenly saying they won't give money and saying that, you know, this is too far, this is too much. I mean, to this, I always want to say, you know, they've been assaulting conservative speakers, including like elderly people like Charles Murray, and they've been doing this for the last 20 years, and their politics haven't changed at all. This issue, all of a sudden, some people are waking up. And I guess it's a good thing, sure, but we told you so is kind of tough not to say here. That's how I view it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. We told you so. You just now woke up and decided Colombia was an evil communist dump that was poisonous to America. That you just found that out a couple days ago? All right, so along those lines, Buck, we already saw Claudine Gay get the heave-ho at Harvard. She's not the last, for sure. There will be other heads rolling at universities, in large part because of what you said, that donor money, that sweet, sweet donor money's going away. You don't get Robert Kraft Hall anymore at Columbia. But they're not stopping, Buck. We have all these big mega donors leaving, and yesterday the faculty joined the students at Columbia. It's not like they're slowing down. What say you?
Well, you know, these are icebergs in terms of the endowments of these places that will take a long time to melt. You look at Harvard. What is Harvard's? Is it 40 billion or 60 billion? I don't even know how many tens of billions it is now. But a lot of these schools have just been they're increasingly becoming hedge funds that happen to teach classes, right? I mean, they have so much wealth amassed from the donors for the last, particularly the last 20 years or so. So, you know, they will be able to push through this for a period of time. And I also think that, you know, we're forgetting there are a lot of people who are making noise on this issue. This will fade. And I don't think that they will have changed their mind on a whole range of other things. And they'll probably go back to writing the checks. I hate to say it. I just think that this is a little bit of a donor tantrum that's going on that I think will be short-lived. And I think that that's why a lot of these, you know, they realize that it's affecting their bottom line. I mean, to be sure, that's why they're sending in the police in some of these places, as you're seeing on the screen. But fundamentally, the problem, Jesse, it's not like this is a one rule or a policy that the university can change, you would have to fire most of the tenured staff at most of the elite universities in the country if you wanted this mentality, this approach, this belief system that they have, or whatever you want to call it, this kind of mania, to really disappear, or at least to be going in the other direction in a significant way. And they're not going to do that, right? This is what I mean. It's rotten so much further even than what we see on this issue of a bunch of communists who, you know, love Hamas. And it's, of course, funny because Hamas would completely hate them and mutilate and murder them probably because they're savages. Hamas is an evil terrorist entity. But yeah, I mean, that's where this is. I don't know. The right kind of sits here and looks at this all and says, yeah, these people are... Jesse, there was a flag burning on my campus 3 weeks after 9/11? Think about it.
Of course. Of course.
Like this. So yeah, people, people are like late to this party and they're like, oh my gosh, they're crazy and look what they're saying. I'm like, they have been training kids to hate white Christian males at these schools as the oppressor and, you know, the patriarchy and all this stuff for as long as we've been adults, probably longer than that. And now on this issue, they're just figuring out that these kids are lunatics who hate America and civilization. Welcome to the party, pal, as McClane said in Die Hard.
Welcome to the party. Actually, I have a question about domestic and how this applies domestically. Joe Biden's getting a lot of play for this very fine people on both sides line he gave yesterday. He was Joe Biden. I'm sure you've seen it.
Do you condemn the anti-Semitic protests on college campuses?
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians and how they're being moved.
Buck, so I have this theory, and it's just a theory, and I know that you're more than willing to correct me when you disagree with me on these things, but I don't think Democrats at Biden's level, forget about the street animals on campus, I don't think any of them care about any of this stuff at all. They don't really care about Israel. They don't care about Hamas. They don't care about Palestine. They don't care about Iran. They don't care about these things. They care about their domestic voting coalition, and they need all the Muslims in America to keep voting Democrat, and they need 2/3 of the Jews in America to keep voting Democrat, and their entire response to all of this has just been trying to walk that tightrope and keep both coalitions in the Democrat fold. Am I crazy?
No, I've said this all along about this issue. The whole position of the Democrats is to play both sides, have it both ways, have their cake and eat it too. They want to play this game where it's not possible, but they just are hoping that no one's going to figure out what's really happening or that they're not going to be held to account for it. You can't say that you're opposed to the anti-Semitism stuff on campus. I mean, these lunatics, they hate Jews, Jesse. Like, I mean, I even feel like anti-Semitism is sort of, it almost sterilizes what's going on a little bit, or makes it seem a little like it's academic. Like, oh, they're anti-Semitic. It's like they're saying completely insane, hateful, lunatic stuff. I mean, Israel just suffered the worst terror attack in the world since 9/11. And that's what led us to this moment where they're going into Gaza. Hamas, Israel has, I believe, a God-given right to defend its people and to do whatever it has to do vis-a-vis Hamas. Hunt them all down and kill all of them. If that is what Israel chooses to do, I think they're within the right to do it. And the Biden administration is like, yeah, go get them. But hold on a second. Don't go get them. And you sit there, you go, well, it can't be both, right? It can't be, we stand by Israel's right to defend itself, but we also want a ceasefire. And all along, there's been this, it's interesting. I haven't talked to you about this yet, and I know we're probably running out of time, and I don't even know if I have time to tell you congratulations
on being
signed by Premier. This is really important, though. I mean, Clay loved this one, whenever he starts referring to something I say is, well, we said, I'm like, well, then he likes it because clearly, you know, it's good. It's like, well, we were saying anyway. But I said initially on the show, I said, you have to understand that in America, the Palestinian issue is not a religious conflict. It's a racial conflict. And the way that and you see this, right? You see a lot. There's a lot of black students on campus who feel unbelievable solidarity with the Palestinians. You know, it feels so strongly about this issue. Now, there are some Muslim students that maybe it's more of an issue of religious and historical background for them. But effectively, The radical left on campus views Israel-Palestine as a white oppressor of non-white brown people issue. And that's how they've mobilized around it for a long time now. And it doesn't make sense because there's, you know, there are Ethiopian Jews and there are, you know, I don't even have time to get into all this. And there's a million Arabs living in Israel. And but the point that they, or rather the reality that they work with is this is almost like a foreign extension of BLM. You know what I'm saying? Like this is, and it is very, very similar apparatus at work of how they're mobilizing and trying to shut things down and the slogans and the shouting and all the rest of it. This is the people that were supporting BLM. They obviously didn't achieve anything. In fact, they made the whole country worse and there's more violence and tragically more black people in cities in America died because of the idiotic policies that BLM pushed for because of the increase in homicide and violence, as you and I both know. But this is an opportunity to do that, you know, white oppressor, brown oppressed, you know, situation. I mean, this is basically what they're trying to do right now. And that's, I think, when you see it in that lens, it all makes sense. Because otherwise, like, what do they demand a ceasefire? I would say, for how long? Jesse, these people don't even know, they couldn't name more than two towns, probably more than one town in Israel. Like, they know nothing. These kids are imbeciles. Oh. And they feel so strongly about this that they'll camp out on a quad in a tent and you know, maybe have the police like pepper spray them over. And they're like, ah, you see in the videos, they're all freaking out. I'm like, the cop said move, you don't move, you're gonna get pepper sprayed. Does that all make sense, by the way, in terms of like the racial angle?
It does,
to the conflict?
But it does completely. It's not a religious thing for Americans, it's a racial thing. I'm glad you and I came up with that together. By the way, before I let you go really quickly, Buck, Ilhan Omar's daughter, what are we thinking? Hot? Not hot? She's been in the news a lot. Ilhan Omar is much debated. I'm dealing with the mother-daughter thing. What are your thoughts?
Well, for those at home who may not know, years ago, Jesse unknowingly got me into trouble because we had a public discussion on Twitter about how Ilhan Omar was good looking. And then some people at a place where I previously worked, not a place where I work now, got very upset at me saying, Ilhan Omar, crazy, but like kind of hot. I will admit, I do not know. What is her daughter in the, I know I've read the headlines, but I haven't really seen the photos. But my
she's
guess
part
is
part of the protests. She got kicked out.
She may fall somewhere on the hot crazy scale that, you know, is going to make you question. You know, maybe you could bring her politics around. I don't know. I think it's possible.
Okay. Well, you know, life's about adventure, Buck. That's all I wanted, Buck. Thank you.
Congratulations on being the Da Vinci of radio for a second here. You know, I mean, this is, I'm amazed you still have me on your show, Mr. Big Time over here. Now, you know, going into syndication for more years. You know, some of us, every time I see, I love Michael Berry. Every time I see Michael Berry, he reminds me, I thought that I was an early Jesse Kelly believer, but Michael Berry was actually like the very first. But I was like number two, okay? So I'm right. Yeah, that's right. Michael was like, he's going to be King Jesse. He's super talented, and he beat me. You know, it's like I was seeing the pitcher, and he was the first talent scout. And then I came along. I'm like, I'll give you a scholarship to my school, too. You were like, sorry, Barry beat me to it. Anyway, but congratulations. Great show. Great stuff. I love it when people send me your tweets and they're like, aren't you friends with this guy? He's hilarious. I'm like, I think I'm kind of funny, too, but not as funny. Clearly. But congratulations.
Well, thank you, my brother. I really do owe you. And Michael, I owe you, and I appreciate it very much, brother. All right, it's enough about Buck and me. Let's focus on something else. Let's focus on, I don't know, life, God, and guns. haven't I been telling you about Blackout Coffee? Haven't I been telling you these are our people, Blackout Coffee? Oh, the other side, just a little Old Glory for you. You know, Blackout Coffee, on top of being amazing coffee, they'll send you whatever you want, by the way, all ground up, whole bean, whatever you want. They share our values, and that's what matters most to me now. Putting our money where our morals are. We all enjoy a cup of coffee, or two, if I'm being honest, every single day. Why not support patriots who believe in life, God, and guns? How's that sound? BlackoutCoffee.com/Jesse gets you 20% off your first order. go enjoy the greatest coffee ever delivered to your front door and maybe pick yourself up a mug while you're there. Blackoutcoffee.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, I think we should probably check in on the lawfare going on in the country, because it's kind of a big deal if your justice system turns entirely against you and decides you're an enemy of the people. That little things like that. And anyway, Trump's got a trial going on right now in New York. He's not allowed to talk about it, which doesn't sound very constitutional at all. But there's a gag order. Trump's mad about it. There's all kinds of other stuff going on. And Julie Kelly knows what's up. Go subscribe to her Substack called Declassified. All right, Julie. The trial itself, I can't decide why exactly it's not capturing America's attention right now. Is it because we already know they're going to find him guilty because it's a dirty bunch of commies up there or what? But what's happening?
Well, so I think the first witness took the stand today, the editor, publisher, owner of the National Enquirer. So think about this trial, Jesse. So we're going to have the publisher of the National Enquirer. We're going to have Michael Cohen, the disgraced attorney. I believe he's disbarred, spent some time in prison. Then we have Stormy Daniels. I mean, this is about as lurid as you could possibly get. So, you know, I think maybe that's part of the reason most of America is turning it off, because it is so lurid with so many disgraceful characters populating it, not the least of whom is Judge Juan Merchan, a completely compromised judge whose daughter right now is probably signing off many new lucrative contracts in her digital marketing firm with high-level, high-powered Democrats, as she has made tens of millions of dollars off of people like Adam Schiff and Kamala Harris. So this is, of course, just a circus. But the serious side of it is it is sidelining Donald Trump, who is forced to sit in this courtroom every single day in New York, off of the campaign trail, away from his business affairs, and away from explaining to the American people why he should be the president and should defeat Joe Biden. Joe Biden is free to do whatever he wants. And Donald Trump now is stuck in this courtroom for at least the next 6 weeks.
And shelling out money, Julie, a lot has been made about Trump using some campaign funds, PAC funds, for fund legal defense. But I don't think people understand exactly how much this stuff costs. And I don't think they understand that that does mean there's not enough money to campaign right now. This is hurting, is it not?
It absolutely is, because think of this. Not only does he have the New York trial, this criminal trial, he also, and in fact, one of his lawyers is one of the top defense lawyers in the classified documents case in Southern Florida. That is still progressing, with motions being filed every day, which I was posting last night and today on Twitter. Then, of course, we have Thursday, the Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments on the presidential immunity question, which relates to his January 6th trial in Washington, D.C. If the Supreme Court comes back and denies his claims of presidential immunity, that is going to restart, but he's still paying his attorney to go to oral arguments and make his case on Thursday. And then, of course, we've got the RICO case with Fannie Willis, who oddly, I don't know why, Jesse, suddenly kind of disappeared from the headlines. That's kind of strange. So yes, it costs an enormous amount of money, time, and resources. And I think that's a great point. It's not just taking him physically off the campaign trail, but diverting who knows, untold amount of money to all these various lawyers and proceedings around the country.
Just wow to think that's where we are. All right, let's move on to a different Trump trial, the classified documents trial. I understand this is the one you've elaborated for us many times about Judge Cannon. This appears to be the most reasonable of the judges. There's not going to be a bunch of gag order crap, but something happened with documents and redacted and unredacted. I don't understand this stuff. Julie, what happened?
So this has been a fight, Jesse, for the past 3 months. In January, Trump and his defense lawyers filed what was called a motion to compel. And what they did in that motion is they argued that the real legitimate prosecution team in this classified documents case is not just Jack Smith, a few of his lying prosecutors, and a few FBI investigators, that this prosecution team, the scope of it, extends to the most powerful government agencies that have done this before, as you know, Jesse, the Department of Justice, the FBI Counterintelligence Unit, the National Archives, the intelligence community. So they outlined in this motion all of the other officials and agencies who were involved from the very beginning. And this dates back to the spring of 2021, trying to concoct and piece together some sort of documents or records investigation and prosecution of Donald Trump. Well, Judge Cannon, because she is holding DOJ and Jack Smith's feet to the fire and is acting like a legitimate judge, Jesse, not like Juan Merchan or some of the other judges that we've seen, and she has repeatedly said that she will side on the American people's side and that she believes in full transparency to the extent that other interests are protected, but that we have a right to know what's been going on in this case. Jack Smith has been fighting it, but finally yesterday, a big section of that first motion that detailed the collusion, also starting with the Biden White House, I have to emphasize, all of these different agencies and officials working with the Biden White House to create this case. So a lot of that motion was unredacted. A lot of the exhibits were unredacted. So we can finally see FBI forms. We can see email chains. We can see other documentation that proves this collusion between the Biden White House, DOJ, and these other interests to target Donald Trump once again and manufacture another criminal case, flimsy criminal case, against the former president and two of his co-defendants. So, as you know, I was posting this on Twitter last night. People can go and see that I have the redacted motion and exhibits versus what was unsealed yesterday. And now you can see, Jesse, why Jack Smith and the DOJ and Biden White House wanted that material to be kept under seal.
Yeah, I want people to go look at it. I want people to go, is it just on your Twitter? Is it on your Substack too? I want people to go read this stuff because it's interesting. I found it was interesting when I was combing through it last night. I was creeping on your Twitter, Julie. I found it interesting what they were redacting versus what they didn't want me to see. I found to be extremely interesting.
It always is, right? Because, of course, we heard the old argument. We have to keep this protected. We have to keep witnesses protected. We have to protect the integrity of the investigation. We have to protect national security interests. Well, of course, none of that was true. This related to another cover-up, just like Juan Merchan is doing with his gag order, preventing Donald Trump from talking about his daughter Lauren's lucrative business dealings with Democrats. This was another cover-up operation in Southern Florida, attempted cover-up operation to conceal what was going on and has been going on behind the scenes with the DOJ. And keep in mind, Jesse, not just the classified documents case, but we also know Joe Biden in the White House intimately involved in pressuring the DOJ, they needed to be pressured, to pursue the January 6, 2020 election interference case in Washington. So the idea, of course, no one on our side believes that Joe Biden has taken a hands-off approach here, or Merrick Garland, or anybody else that we're told has been independent from political interests. No, this is the exact reverse. And now we have Joe Biden, his general counsel, and other people like Lisa Monaco, for the deputy attorney general, with their fingerprints all over yet again another concocted case against Donald Trump.
All right, let's move on to the forgotten souls, the January 6th political prisoners who've been rotting in prison since January 7th. Julie, what's going on with them? Any updates? Another Supreme Court, oral arguments? What do we have for these poor people?
Right. So, Jesse, we're now exceeded 1,400 individuals raided, arrested, investigated, charged, and many behind bars for their participation in January 6th. The Department of Justice, Matthew Graves, D.C. U.S. Attorney, continues to announce new arrests every day. I think that there were two today. But there is some good news, as we talked about the 1512C2 SCOTUS oral arguments last Tuesday, where a majority of the justices indicated that they disapproved of how DOJ has weaponized that obstruction statute against more than 350 J6 defendants, including Donald Trump. But Jesse, there was some other good news today, and that is the Supreme Court demanded that the government, after they initially refused, demanded that the government file a response in a petition for a writ of cert, meaning that the Supreme Court, whether they will take up this case or not. But this relates to a misdemeanor for January 6th. And I think what happened last week, Jesse, is the justices got an earful from U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Preligar about how these statutes have been weaponized and will only apply to January 6th defendants or protesters on the right, which is what she made very clear. And I think the timing is interesting that the Supreme Court now has told Elizabeth Preligar, when she said, I'm not going to respond to this petition. And the Supreme Court came back today and said, oh yes, we do. We want to hear your answer by the end of May. That could signal that they would take up this J6 misdemeanor, very common misdemeanor conviction. And that will just again continue to dismantle and unravel this reckless, abusive, retaliatory, unlawful prosecution of J6 protesters.
Let's hope so. Fingers crossed for him. Julie, as always, thank you, ma'am. All right. Abortion's in the news. It's going to be in the news. Democrats are going to make sure it's in the news. Let's talk about it next. Before we talk about that with Emma Waters, let's talk about your timeshare. The timeshare you want out of. The timeshare you can't get out of. Or at least you think you can. Because this is the very common scam they do. It's very common. Sadly, it's become a business practice in America. You get someone locked into something, some sort of a contract. Gyms do this all the time. And then they don't let you out. Oh, you want out? Oh, sorry. You've got to put it in writing and send it by certified mail. Timeshare companies just tell you, oh, sorry, you're in it for life. For life. Pay your annual fees. Doesn't matter that you can't use it. Doesn't matter that we told you, maybe try us next year. You can never get out. But Lone Star Transfer has changed all that. Lone Star Transfer will legally and permanently set you free. Would you like that? They can't do it unless you call them. The phone call itself is free. You want to stop paying those annual fees, special assessments, 844-310-2646. 99% of the time, they get people out legally and permanently. Make the phone call. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
A world of make-believe. How many times have we talked about that here on the show, how communists live in a world of make-believe? Your liberal Aunt Peggy, she exists in a world that is not real. She does. She genuinely does. She exists in a world where Trump is a Russian agent, right? She exists in a world where Border Patrol troops are troops. They're troops and they're slaughtering illegals on the border. She lives in a world that is not real. And liberal Aunt Peggy, She believes the things she's told on television. Gavin Newsom, I'll play it for you in a second. He's getting a lot of crap for playing the most ridiculous ad you've ever seen in your life. And it is ridiculous, and it's all lies, and it's over the top. But I want you to remember something as you watch this. Liberal Aunt Peggy sees this, and she believes it.
We're almost there. You're gonna make it.
Trump Republicans want to criminalize young Alabama women who travel for reproductive care.
Miss, I'm going to need you to step out of the vehicle, take a pregnancy test.
Stop them by taking action at righttotravel.org. Campaign for Democracy Group is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Sorry, it's so over the top, I can't stand. But look, these nutballs believe this stuff. Joining me now, Emma Waters, Senior Research Associate at the Heritage Foundation. Emma, it's unbelievable, but people believe this ridiculous crap.
Yeah, it has the power of emotional persuasion, which is the number one thing that they have going for them when it comes to this abortion messaging, right? For so many years, Democrats have been framing pregnancy literally as a life-threatening illness, even when the pregnancy is perfectly healthy and natural, which just couldn't be further from the truth. And these sorts of ads just reinforce the messaging that by getting pregnant in and of itself, somehow women's lives are under attack, right? And if you think about this, abortion being the taking of unborn life, maybe it's not the worst idea that we actually try to protect life through a myriad of ways. Although what this actual ad is presenting is absolutely ridiculous, right? No one is being arrested for traveling across state lines, least of all the women who are struggling in this terrible situation.
Emma, could you explain for those of us who can't follow every state law, every state decision, what is going on in Alabama with IVF? What does it mean? What even is IVF for those who don't understand? Will you just lay all this out for us, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So in vitro fertilization is simply when you take a woman's egg and a man's sperm and you fertilize it inside of a petri dish in a lab. So in Alabama, a couple of months ago, they had a ruling where parents who had a fertility clinic negligently destroy their embryo. So against the parents' wishes, the fertility clinic allowed someone to come in and destroy them. And the parents said that they wanted to sue for legal recourse, but not for the loss of property, but for the loss of person. This was a pretty simple extension of the Wrongful Death of a Minor Child Act in Alabama, which said that if an embryo, or really a child from the moment of conception, is harmed inside of a woman's body, then you have the right to sue for legal recourse as the wrongful death of a minor. So the Alabama ruling simply said that if that's true for babies that are inside of the womb, then we should extend it to fertilized eggs in vitro fertilization, and they should be protected from that moment of conception too. And this is what really started this entire national controversy that we see today. So Alabama rashly overreacted, and they actually passed a law that gives the fertility industry complete civil and criminal immunity in the process of IVF, which means that if embryos are destroyed, even through the willful negligence of the fertility clinic against the parents' wishes, parents have no legal recourse to hold the industry accountable, which is insane, right? Because in fast food, right, we have a ton of regulations where if you're accidentally burned from hot coffee at McDonald's, if you're poisoned from bad meat at another place, you have the right to sue and hold these places accountable. But for some reason in the fertility industry, where we're creating life itself, we all of a sudden think that they should have absolute immunity in however they treat these unborn lives, regardless of the parents' wishes. So as we're thinking about these issues, I really like to take it from making the conversation solely about IVF, which has been the national discourse, and shift it to a larger conversation about treating couples with infertility. Because by shifting it to infertility itself, this opens the door to a wide array of possible treatments that are available for couples that can actually heal the underlying causes of infertility. Of course, that's harder to catch in a soundbite for politicians. So a lot of what we're seeing on the national level really comes down to a big debate between reproductive autonomy. So IVF has now been grafted into the abortion conversation with highly emotional ads playing that are saying that Republicans and conservatives are threatening to take away IVF.
none of them are, and that somehow this is under attack going into the election of 2024. And so this really is, I think, one of the few cards that Democrats have in their favor, and they're playing it for everything they have.
Emma, can you talk about surrogacy? This is something you've written about. This is one of those topics that most people aren't totally clear on. The common reaction when you find out, oh, we can't get pregnant, we're getting a surrogate, is, ooh, that's great. But talk about surrogacy.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, so surrogacy, or commercial surrogacy, like we often call it, involves couples who use in vitro fertilization to create an embryo, but because they're either unable to carry the child themselves or would not like to, as happens in many cases, they decide to hire another woman to gestate and birth their child for them. So this has a standard contract. And then in the United States, women who are surrogates make anywhere from about $25,000 to $70,000. Just for the time and energy of carrying the child, on top of medical expenses that are paid, as well as any other reimbursements. So this does seem like a really good option for couples who are unable or unwilling to carry a child, but it carries with it a lot of major issues that Europe has really experienced, which is why many European nations either ban surrogacy or severely limit who can be surrogates and who can access it. So the three primary concerns here when it comes to surrogacy is, first, the exploitation of women, second, the commodification of children, and third, national security concerns. So with the exploitation of women in surrogacy, you're often dealing with a class of women who are in a particular situation of financial need, and so we're compelled by that financial need to seek out this highly lucrative opportunity. However, when they get into the surrogacy contract, they find that it's an incredibly detailed contract controlling every aspect of their life. If they can sleep with their partner, what kind of food they can have, even if they're going to be required to abort the baby for any reason, as well as for what kind of birth they have. And once that child is born, the child is whisked away right away. And in many times, surrogates don't even have the opportunity to meet the child they birthed. The second is the commodification of children. So just straight and simple, it is illegal to pay for a child. The buying and selling of children is totally illegal. So if, for example, a woman gets pregnant and then a couple offers to pay for the child, that would be absolutely illegal in all 50 states. But with a commercial surrogacy contract, if you sign the contract before the conception of a child, it's deemed a legal and binding contract. So there's actually been multiple FBI arrests in California where clinics have gotten surrogates pregnant and then advertised that they were in need of parents to rescue these children after a fake contract fell through. And they've all been arrested on these grounds. But really, we're talking about a difference in time, not a difference in kind here. So the idea that you can pay these lucrative amounts of money to create a child inserts this really perverse view of children that are something that anyone for any reason could purchase. And the worst part of all of this is that most states don't require any background checks. They don't require psychological assessments or even home visits to ensure that the person or couple commissioning the surrogate comes from a safe home. So in Chicago, just a couple of weeks ago, the FBI actually arrested a veterinarian on charges of knowingly filming and distributing child pornography. And they arrested him 1 week before he was going to pick up his surrogate-born son, who they found messages of him describing for the purpose of sexual exploitation. And this is just like one example, right? There are many others where you can literally commission a child for any reason, even the most perverse kinds. And then very briefly on the last one, the national security concerns are huge. So did you know, and you probably didn't know, that Chinese nationals from China are the number one international demographic who comes to the United States for surrogacy by three times the amount of the next country? And a large part of this reason is that in the United States, children who were born gain and maintain the full rights of citizenship, including access to education, special clearance levels, health insurance, and more. So there are entire websites and articles that you can find through NPR, New York Times, CNN, and more, where Chinese nationals have literally said, we came to the United States so that our child could have citizenship. And when they turn 21, either we can become US citizens, because it's a lot easier with a green card, or they can just become Chinese nationals. But this is a massive, underregulated, unaccountable industry where we literally have our number one foreign enemy taking advantage of commercial surrogacy in the United States in order to further exploit the United States.
Golly, that is just being invaded through the womb. Gosh, I tell you. Emma, thank you. That was extremely informative. I appreciate it. Yeah, I actually hadn't heard of that. That sucks. All right, we have light in the mood. I need one after that. That was a lot. That story about the vet. Anyway, next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And Coates scaring cats makes me laugh.
What the f- just happened? What the f- just happened?
That's funny. I'll see you tomorrow.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.